Okay, we begin here on the top of Pei Gimel with Aleph. The Gemara is discussing what our Mishnah laid out, which was a framework for deciding whether we give food to someone who is sick. So there in the Mishnah, it tells us whether we consult with the sick person themselves or we consult with the Bikim, with the doctors. So now Rabbi Yanai gives us a principle, which is, Amar Rabbi Yanai, Chole Omer Tzarich, Rofe Omer Inu Tzarich. The sick person themselves says they need to eat, but the doctors say they do not have to eat. Shomim L'Chole. We listen to the sick person, my taima, lev yodea marat nafsho. Person knows their own pain, they have a better understanding of what their needs are, and someone on the outside doesn't have that perspective. My says, pshita, why would you have thought otherwise? Maudetema rofe kimleitve, that the rofe is an expert. You have a doctor here, the doctor knows, and we're going to follow him. Kamash malon, that we give a say to the patient in this case. And if the patient demands food and says that I need it, then we listen to them. Then he has a second principle, which is, Rofe omer tzarich, mechole omer inu tzarich. The doctor says that the chole needs to eat, and the patient says I do not need to eat. Shomim rofe. We override the patient's will here and say that the doctor is correct. My taima, tun bahu denokit le. He is delirious. Because of his sickness, he's somewhat delirious, and he can't really assess the situation properly. Since he can't assess the situation properly, we lean on the experts. Those are the two principles that Rabbi Yanai lays out for us. Both of those principles are problematic vis-a-vis our Mishnah, and that's what the Gemara says now. It's not our Mishnah. Chole, machilin oto al pi biki'in. Our Mishnah says that you can feed a chole based on the judgment of biki'in, in plural, which is al pi biki'im in, al pi atzmo lo. Number one, you need experts, you need doctors, not on his own volition. And number two is, al pi bikiin in, al pi baki echad lo. It has to be a plurality of doctors that give you the opinion, but not the opinion of a single doctor. Both of those undermine the two statements of Rabbi Yanai. Rabbi Yanai said, first of all, we listen to the choleh, and number two is we listen to a single doctor. Both of those do not fit into our Mishnah, which demands multiple doctors and does not give any say to the patient. What's the case there? Damar lo tzarichna. So the Mishnah is talking about a case where he says, I don't need to eat. So, well, the lisvule al pi baki. Wait a minute. You just said before that Rabbi Yanai says, even if the patient says no and the doctor says yes, the doctor overrides. So if that's the case, our Mishnah still doesn't work because it's asking for multiple doctors, not a single doctor. It says, lo, tzricha, dika achrina b'hadei damar lo tzrich. Because there's another doctor along with the patient saying that he doesn't need to eat. Machina toa pi bikin. And therefore we feed him based on the bikin. So it's the patient and a single doctor saying, no, he doesn't need to eat. And then you have two doctors saying that he does need to eat. In that case, we say, go ahead and feed him. And where it says again, pshito. That's no chiddush. Safek nefashotu. The case of safek pikuach nefesh. Safek nefashotu hakel. We're always makel when it comes to safek pikuach nefesh. Or the other way to phrase that is, we're always machmir in pikuach nefesh. So anytime we have a choice, and here we have uncertainty about what the outcome should be, then we follow the kula position, which is we give him to eat because of that uncertainty. We don't want to take any risks in pikuach nefesh. It says, look, tzricha deika treyachrina b'hadei. It's not just a single doctor on his side, but there are two doctors on his side, Amri lo tzarich, that say he doesn't need it. So you have the patient, along with two doctors, saying he doesn't need to eat, and we have the other two doctors on the other side saying he does need to eat. V'af agav damar Rav Safra, even though Rav Safra has a principle which is, trei kameya umeya kitrei, it doesn't matter how many people are testifying, 2 and 100 are the same weight in terms of edut. Once you have a kat edim is weighed not by the number of people in the kat, the fact that they are a group of edim that comes together. So whether you have 2 in that group or if you have 100 in the group, they have the same weight in terms of the halacha, but that is hani mile l'inyan edut. That has to do with testimony when you need full-fledged testimony. Aval l'inyan umdana, when it comes to assessments, here we're talking about monetary assessments, they're trying to figure out what the value of an object is, and then you have people giving different opinions or opining on the issue, then butter deot azlinan. Then we go by majority rules, then each individual counts. Quantity is as important as the fact that you have kat edim anymore, because we're no longer looking for edut, we're looking for a assessment of the situation, and we need to go with the majority. So over there, numbers matter. So if that was the case, and we applied that over here, we would say that he shouldn't eat. We have 3 saying don't eat, 2 saying he should eat, which they don't eat. The Gemara says, but hani mila linyan umdana timamona. That's only talking about monetary matters when you're trying to assess the value of an object. V'halcha safek nefashotu. Since it's safek nefashot, we do not follow those rules. As long as there is a group of individuals who say he needs to eat, let's say a minimum of two, that say that he needs to eat, then we override even multiple people saying that he does not need to eat. Once we've had that significant group, which would be considered two, that's already of significance, then we say eat, and we don't worry about the fact the patient says I don't need to eat, and that there are other doctors saying that he does not need to eat. Mar says, v'amiktani seifa. What about the latter half of our Mishnah? It says, ein sham bikiim, machilin oto apiel atzmo. If there are no bikiim there, then we feed him based on his own opinion. Michlau, the Reisha damar tzarich. Makes it sound like the Reisha was a case where he also said he was tzarich, that he needed to. It's a case where he says, I need it. And we have doctors. So then we listen to the doctors. But then this latter case is a case where there are no doctors. So we listen to him. But it makes it sound like the patient is always on board in terms of eating. Question is, does he have any weight in the figuring? In the first case, no, because there are experts there. In the second case, where there are no experts, sounds like he does have an opinion. Gemara says, Askure mechzera. The Mishnah is missing same transitional words here to help you get through it. V'haki tani. This is what it means. B'med amarim amurim. When is that true? De amar lo tzarechani. That's when he says, I don't need it. That's the ratio. That's b'med amarim amurim. When's the case that we listen to the bikim? That's a case where he says, I don't need it. So the bikim can override him, even when there are other doctors on his side. Aval amar tzarechani. Ein sham bikim trei elachad. D'amar lo tzarech machilin oto al pi atzmo. If there are no bikim there, meaning that there are no two bikim there, elachad, but you only have one baki, d'amar lo tzarech, who says he doesn't need to it, achil no to al pi atzmo, then he gets to make the determination. So now we've solved the problem, because now we've got both the Rabbi Yanai's statements into our Mishnah. In the first case of the Mishnah, the reason why you need multiple experts is because you have the Choleh saying no, and you have multiple experts saying no. So that's why I need Bikiyim to offset them. Had that not been the case, then the Baki, a single Baki, would have enough power to say that he has to eat. That we said is Bamed Dvarim Amurim. When is that case in the Reisha said? That's the case where the Choleh says, I don't need it. But in the case where the Choleh says, I do need it, then, if there are no bikiim there, ein sham bikiim means there are no plurality of bikiim, there are no multiple doctors there, only a single doctor opposing him, then he gets weight, and he's able to make the determination over there. So that's Rabbi Yanai, and that's how we fit it into the Mishnah. Again, a single rofeh has enough power to feed him, and the individual himself has enough power to feed himself. That's only when we're doing one-on-one. As soon as we get to multiples, then we have to look at the situation. Again, as long as there are multiple doctors saying yes, then we're going to say he has to eat, no matter what the opposition to that is. That doesn't matter if the patient's opposed to it or there are other doctors on the side of the patient who are opposed to it. Now, Mar Bar Rav Ashi Amar, Kohecha Damar Tzarich Ani, if the patient says I need it, Kele'ika Me'ad Amri Lo Tzarich L'Didei Shaminan. Even if you have 100 people, 100 doctors saying he doesn't need to eat, if the patient says I'm eating, that's it, the patient eats. Patient rules in this case, Shne'amar, Lev Yodei Amarat Nafshom. So he says that is such an important factor that he puts so much weight into the patient's view. Rabbi Yanai gave the patient view weight when he was up against one doctor. So that's when he says, oh, the patient knows better. But after that, we don't listen to the patient. Over here, Amar Rav Ashi says the patient rules no matter what because he's the one suffering. And he gets to make that determination. Tznan, what about our Mishnah? Imein sham bikim, machinon oto api atzmo. If there are no experts there, then we feed him based on his own opinion. Taima deleka bikin. That's only because there are no experts there. Haika bikin, if there are doctors there. Lo, we would not assume that his will governs. So, hachikamar. Bamed dvarim amurim damar lo tzarichani. When do we say that that's true? That's when he says, I don't need it. So then the bikin, then the rofim have power. Aval omer tzarichani, if he says, I need to eat. Ein sham bikin klal. Machilin oto api atzmo. Nemar lev yodei amarat nafsho. Then we feed him no matter what. Now, as Rashi points out, ein sham bikin, that doesn't solve your problem because we just said before that that's exactly the question of my Rav Ashi is. Rashi says they're reading ein sham bikin differently now. Ein sham bikin klal means, ein sham bikin klomar, ein bikin utan klom. Ein sham bikin klal doesn't mean that they're not physically present. It is that their opinion carries no weight. Ein sham bikin means whatever they say is irrelevant. There's no place for them in this situation because the patient said he needs to eat. The patient governs in this case. So what's very interesting over here, Tosafot over here says, the psak halacha here is plukta derivuta. It's a plukta, meaning between the giants, about how to paskin over here. Do we paskin like Mar Bar Rav Ashi, or do we paskin like Rabbi Yanai? That's a big napkamina in terms of the patient's will, whether they can override doctors, or they only have a right to override a single doctor, but not multiple doctors. It's a big nafka mina between their opinions. It really revolves around something that we discussed yesterday, which is this idea of halacha kebatra. Halacha kebatra, Mar Bar Ravashi is very late. He's in the 7th, 8th generation of Amoraim. So does he carry weight? So they was some machloket as to what the principle is with regards to Mar Bar Ravashi and Shas. And that's what Tosafot is mentioning over here. He says that Beseder Tanaim v'Amorim Tav Hilchoto k'Mar Bar Ravashi b'Kulei Shas. Mar Bar Ravashi carries weight, and his halacha is like him everywhere in Shas. The Bar Mipach Shva v'Odita. He has two exceptions to the rule where the halacha is not like Mar Bar Ravashi. Then Rabbeinu Chananel says that the Hilchoto is like Mar Bar Ravashi in all of Shas. Bar Mipach Shva v'Chivare Chivire Gabei Tididim. He has two exceptions also. One of them the same, one of them different. But in both of their instances, they say that the halacha is like Mar Bar Ravashi throughout Shas, and therefore we would paskin like him in this case. On the other hand, the Rav Haigon and Rabbeinu Gershom pasku hilchata kavate b'meipach shvua v'odita u'bekulei shas lo. They have the exact opposite of what the Seder Tanaim v'Amorim says. They say the halacha is like Mar Bar Ravashi only in those two cases, and the rest of the shas, the halacha is not like him. So now, this is a question of principle of psak. How do we deal with Mar Bar Ravashi and Shas? So here Tosafot says we have Geonim on both sides here saying that the principle is the exact opposite. Either the halacha is like him always or the halacha is never like him except for it. That would determine over here. That's why he's saying it's a machloka de Ravuta that we do paskin like Mar Bar Ravashi, that the choleh gets significant weighting in any decision making because he's Yodea Marat Nafsho. He knows exactly what's going on inside of him, and therefore he carries a lot of weight in the decision process here as well to eat on Yom HaKippurim. Rabbi Kiva here has a tshuva, and you could understand why we would give the chole so much weight in general, as there's a tshuva about a young girl who is very sick, and eating actually hurts her when she eats. So her father asked the Shiloh of Rabbi Kiva here with regards to Erev Yom HaKippurim, does the girl have to eat? There's a mitzvah to eat. He says, this girl is charid al dvar Hashem. She wants to do exactly what the halacha is, and she knows it's a mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur, so she wants to eat, despite the fact that it may be detrimental to her health. Rabbi Kiva Eger writes back that for sure she should not eat. He says, number one, he's mistapic about whether women have a chiyuv on Erev Yom Kippurim to eat. He leaves it bitzara chiyun, leaving in favor of the fact that they do, but he leaves it bitzara chiyun. And then he tells the father, I want you to get a number of people to come and tell the girl in my name that she may not eat. But you see that people in general, their natural tendency is to do what's right and to do the mitzvah. Like the Rambam says, that a person, kofin oto achemer rotzani, people want to do the right thing. Come say Yom Kippur. People understand the significance of Yom Kippur. A person's natural tendency is to want to fast on Yom Kippur, not to break the fast on Yom Kippur. So if a patient says already, I need to break my fast, in general, we're going to put weight in that because exactly this thing, lev yodea marat nafsho. Person knows what's going on, and again, their natural inclination would be not to break the fast. And I think that's why we put so much weight in what they're saying, not only because of what they know, but because we believe that they wouldn't break the fast unless they really needed to, and really, unless it was really necessary. Of course, there are some people that are not, but I think the overwhelming majority of people you could put in that category are people that would not make that decision willy-nilly, but they only do it if they really felt that it was necessary in that case. All right, now the Mishnah deals with, again, more pikuach nefesh issues, which is mishach zo bulmus, someone who gets caught by this ravenous hunger. Machin oto, afil dvarim tmeim, you feed him things that are even non-kosher, ad shi'uru enav, until you see the light of his eyes again, until you see him come back. It's a sickness that makes a person start to look very pale, and if he doesn't eat sufficiently, he will die from this ravenous hunger. So because of that, we suspend all isurim and say, go ahead and eat what you need to eat until this person is come to. Mishenashcho kelib shote, person who gets bitten by a rabid dog, it seems like. We don't give him from the liver of the dog. That was obviously assumed to be medicinal in nature, that if you ate the liver of the dog, that it was efficacious against getting bitten by a rabid dog. Rimatya ben Charash matir. Rimatya ben Charash says it's mutar. He thinks that the medicinal properties are efficacious, and therefore he says you can't feed it to them. Chachamim say that we're not certain that this has really any medicinal benefit, so we're not going to allow you to eat nevela in order to do something that is very precarious or questionable in nature. Vodamai Rimatya ben Charash. Someone who has a pain in his throat. You can take medicine on Shabbat to relieve that. Because that's a question of safek nefashot, of life and death situation. Anytime you have a question about safek nefashot, that's dochet Shabbat. Because there's an Easter against taking medicine on Shabbat, and here it may not be life and death. Rabbi Menachem ben Charash says that the throat ache puts him already into the category of safek nefeshot. You could argue that just having a little pain in your throat is not a safek nefeshot. Doesn't reach that level of safek nefeshot. It happens to be true that there is a remote possibility that a throat ache, if it's a strep throat, and it happens to be that strain that happens to make a person extremely ill, that it could be serious and significant, and that's why we do take antibiotics against it on Shabbat. But in general, a throat ache is a throat ache. You just have to wear it down. You just have to work through it, and it's over. So that might have been their machloket here, is how serious is a throat ache in these situations. All right, Misha nafla alav mapolet. If you have some sort of collapsed building, you have an avalanche, something that buries, but we know our people were there, or we're not sure if there were people there. Safek usham, safek ein usham. We don't know if there were people that were underneath this building when it collapsed. We don't know if there were people there when the avalanche came down. Or, we do know they were there. Safek chai, safek meit. We don't know if they're still alive there or not alive. Safek uti, safek Israel. Question of whether it's Israel or a non-Israel. Mafachim elav etagal. We clear away the collapse, we clear away the avalanche, because safek nefashot. If there's safek nefashot, we continue to work, we continue to violate Shabbat or whatever Yisurim are in the way, in order to get to the person with the probability or possibility that they're alive or there is someone there that we need to save. Matzu ochai, if they find him alive, then mefachim, you keep going, and then you take him out, you rescue him. Vim meit, if you found that he's already passed away, yinichu, then you could stop, you could desist at that point, because there's no reason to continue to be mechalela to Shabbat when there's no benefit to the mate at that point in time. He's already passed away. So there's no reason to continue to be mechalel Shabbat over the mate. Now, we will waive in certain instances dinei derabanan min etzad to take care of the mate, but we're not going to allow you to do isurei doraito or straight on isurei derabanan for the benefit of the mate. So if we find out that the person's already passed away, then we stop. As long as there's a safek nefashot, we're going to let you continue because, again, we said before, safek nefashot agel, that we're always makil when it comes to any safek regarding nefashot. It's clear that the Mishnah is making such a distinction. That there is a difference because there is no dispensation to be mechalal Shabbat if it's not a nefesh Yisrael. The dispensations for chilul Shabbat rely on that it's a nefesh Yisrael. There are, as the Gemara in Gittin talks about, the issues of eva, mishum eva. Because of Mishum Eva, then we don't make those types of distinctions in many instances, including that's what Hatzalah has to do in responding to calls, is that they can't make that distinction because of Mishum Eva, the dangers of making such distinctions. So even though the halacha recognizes the distinctions, in the end it's blurred because of, obviously, the response what that would be if there was such a view or distinction made. Tanu Rabbanan, minayin ayu yudim shehiru enough. How do you know that he's come back? And he gets this bulmos, it says you keep feeding him until the light in his eyes returns. How do you know that he's got the twinkle in his eye again? When does that happen? So mishiavchin ben tov dara. When he can now discern between good and bad. I'm Rabbi, what does that mean, discern between good and bad? Ubitaima. He knows this is the difference between good food and bad food. When he has bulmos, he doesn't care what it tastes like, and he doesn't care what the food is, because he just needs to eat. It's so essential that he eats that he's indifferent between what you're putting in his mouth because he just needs the food. At the point that he reaches where he starts to say, I don't want that, I'd rather have that, then already you know he doesn't need it anymore. Then already if he can make a decision about what he needs and doesn't need, or he doesn't want this or I like this, then already he's at a point where he's not so desperate for the food anymore. Tanrabanan, mishach zo bulmus, machilin oto akal akal. Tanrabanan, mishach zo bulmus, machilin oto akal akal. You feed him light isurim, light by light isurim. So here's the principle that we follow in general, that we try to mitigate or minimize the isurim that are violated in helping someone. We'll always go the route of least resistance. And again, we'll go to higher and higher isurim to violate them if it benefits the chole, if the lesser isur does not help. All of this, again, is where time is not of the essence. If time is of the essence, then we don't worry about this. We do whatever the chole needs. But if we have a little bit of time or decision making, then we do allow for akal akal. Now the Gemara one says, look, If you have tevel and nevela, if you have a choice between feeding him tevel and nevela, machilin oto nevela, we give him nevela. Tevel is an isur that results in mita bidei shamayim. Nevela is an isur lav. So if I have a choice between mita bidei shamayim and an isur lav, machilin oto nevela, we're going to give him the isur lav. Tevel ushvi'it. If I'm going to have a choice between tevel and shvi'it, tevel again is mita bidei shemaim. Shvi'it is an aseh. So maybe you have an isur aseh. Rashi says here it's achar hazman ha-biur. It's shvi'it after the time of biur. Because before the time of biur, you can eat. Perot shvi'it. That's not considered to be a problem because you're mutar. You're supposed to eat perot shvi'it. You're supposed to eat them. Bekdusha perot shvi'it. So that's not a problem. The problem is after the biur, whether you can eat them. And that's a machloket harishonim. As to what the din of Biur Shvi'it is. What do you have to do at Biur Shvi'it? What does that result in afterwards? So Rashi says it's after the Biur based on his Shito. Biur means to eliminate the items of the Shvi'it. And therefore you're in violation of the Aseh by eating Shvi'it versus Tevel, which is Mita B'dei Shemaim. So of course you're going to opt for Shvi'it. Tevel u'truma tanayehi. Get the Tevel and Truma, now you have a problem. Truma is also Mita B'dei Shemaim to eat it. And Tevel is a Mita B'dei Shemaim because it has Truma in it. Embedded in it is Truma. The Tevel has the Isur that is remains in it. That's what it causes it. Now I have an Isur, Mita B'dei Shemaim for both of them. Which one do I opt for? That's a Machloket Tanaim, Titania. Machilin oto Tevel, vein machilin oto Truma. Better to give him Tevel than Truma. But Tema Omer, Truma velo Tevel. Tema says the opposite, that's Truma over Tevel. Amar Rabba. Heicha de Efshar b'chulin. If you have a choice to give him Chulin, Dukuli Amar lo plige, Demet Kininle, Umisafinle. If there's sufficient amount of chulin here, there's no question that we're mafrish the truma, and we give him the chulin from it. So if I have a certain amount of food, if I'm mafrish the truma, the residual that's left, if that's sufficient for him, then there's no question we take off the trumot and masrot, and we give him the chulin food over here. So that's one principle. All right, so the question is, isn't that obvious? So we'll get to why that's not so obvious. All right, keep ligay, b'dolo efshar. Where do they argue? Where there's not enough bichulin. If there's not sufficient in the chulin now, what's the better option? If I'm mafrish the chulin, I'm going to have to use the truma because it's not sufficient, the chulin. So it's better to be mafrish, give him the chulin and the truma, or is it better just to leave it all the way it is, as tevel, and feed it to him? That's where the machloket is. Mar savar, tevel chamur, umar savar, truma chamura. So that's the machloket here. Which one is the more chamur of the two? Mar savar, tevel chamur, about truma, chazi lekoin. Tevel is more chamur because nobody can eat tevel. Truma is of a lesser stringency because a kohen can consume or eat the truma. The fact that someone can eat it already indicates that it's of a lesser form of isur. And therefore, you opt to give him truma rather than tevel. Mar savar truma chamura. Someone says, no, truma is more chamur. About tevel, efshar liit pune. Tevel has the future potential to not be tevel. So by definition, it's a lighter form of isur because of the future possibilities. Truma is permanently that way. It's not going to change its status at all. So now the Gemara asks the question that we mentioned before. Efshar b'chulin. If you can feed him chulin, of course, pshita. I mean, what else would you want him to do in this situation? If he can offer chulin, why wouldn't you offer him chulin and mafrish trumot and masrot? Mar says, lo tzricha b'shabbat. That's what Fred said before. Oh, isn't there an isur of being mafrish trumot and masrot on Shabbat? Shabbat nami pshito. What's the question on Shabbat? Tilto mi d'rabbonon hu. Tilto is only a din d'rabbonon. Now what's interesting here is, hafrasha trumot and masrot, what is the problem being mafrish trumot and masrot on Shabbat? Here the Gemara seems to indicate it's a problem of tilto. The problem of mukse, and that's what the Gilgal Yeshayahu says, Rukiv Eger notes, that's how in Yevamot, it also mentions that it is tilto. But the truth is that the Gemara in other places says it's a problem of tikkun. It's a problem that you're making something now edible on Shabbat, so it looks like it's mechse, like you're being metakein something, like we do with the person who goes to the mikveh, it's metakein gabra. Here you're metakein the food that now becomes edible, just like cooking is changing the food from inedible to the edible state. So to here, midrabanan, you're changing something from the inedible to the edible state. It's like a tikkun that you're doing on Shabbat. So why is the Gemara mentioning tiltol and not tikkun? So the Tosfot Yeshani mentions that in other places in Shas, he doesn't mention this example, but the Gemara in the end of Shabbat also has this example, which is, there's certain times that dinei d'rabbanan are much stronger than classic dinei d'rabbanan. Over there, the Gemara in the end of Shabbat is dealing with tzar balei chayim. And over there, the Gemara deals with tiltol versus tzar balei chayim. Tiltol over there is clearly muksa, and we're talking about a din d'rabbanan. where it says Tzar Bali Chaim, which is either a din d'rabbanan or a din d'oraita, that is a machloket. But there, the Gemara says that tiltul can override. So why would you say that tiltul overrides? Because tiltul is only a din d'rabbanan. It's muksa. Why would you even consider that in this case? So it's clear there that tiltul has a higher standing within dinei d'rabbanan, and that we do not waive it in a lot of situations. What the Gemara calls heimidu chachamim divrayam b'makom Torah. Chachamim put their principle in place, and even in the face of isurei d'oraita. So here, tiltul does carry a higher weight than traditional d'rabbanans. And it might be, with regards to tevel, you have two problems. You have one problem, which is tiltul, it's muksa, because it's not ra'oi. So you have a problem with tiltul, and you have a problem of tikkun. So what the Gemara is saying is, as far as the problem of tikkun, I wouldn't even consider that. I mean, if that's the problem, go ahead and be mafrish trumot masrot. Question is, with regards to tiltul, there, the chachamim might have been himidu d'vrehem. That's a stronger d'rabbanan. That stronger d'rabbanan, I would have thought, maybe you don't violate that on Shabbat, or that carries weight in this decision process. In the end, the Gemara says, pshita tiltul min d'rabbananu. Why would you even think that it carries weight here? Because we're dealing with safek nefashot. We don't get involved even in strong d'rabbanans. The Gemara says, achamai eskina. Now, the problem here is, batzitz shenu nakuv. Talking about a case where you have a pot in which this grew, but it has no hole in it. Let's take a step back. In general, items are chayav in trumot masrot midoraita. They have to be a certain classification, a certain species, which is dagan, tirosh, and yitar. Those items are chayavim midoraita in trumot masrot. Number two is it has to grow in the ground. It's not growing in the ground, then it's not considered to have grown in arad eretz Yisrael. These are mitzvot tluyot ba'aretz. So tluyot ba'aretz, that's when you're chayav midoraita. If you grow the item in a pot that doesn't have holes in the bottom, so it doesn't get some sort of nutrition through the air or through seeing the ground, then it has only a din d'rabbanan of trumot umasrot. So what the Gemara suggests over here, we're talking about an atzitcha in a nakuv, pot that has no hole in it. So that it means that it's only a din d'rabbanan. It's a din d'rabbanan to be mafrish trumot umasrot in this instance. So we're dealing here with tevel d'rabbanan and trumat d'rabbanan now. We've dropped the whole case down to a derabanan level. Now the question is, what do I do? Am I better off eating tevel mi derabanan? Or am I better off doing an Easter derabanan to get it to truma derabanan? That's the question. Which is the better option over here? And that's what the Gemara says. Marzavar tevel chamur, marzavar truma chamura. That one of them says tevel is more chamur, and one says that truma is more chamura in this case where you're dealing with this din derabanan. This atzitcha in a nakuv is a tevel midrabanan. The question is, do I allow you to eat tevel midrabanan? Because that's exactly what it is. It's tevel midrabanan. Why not eat it? Forget about doing other inisurim. Or, do I violate another isur derabanan on Shabbat and be mitakein it to get it to truma derabanan because I'm afraid if I don't do this, when it comes to a doraita, he'll do the same thing. By a doraita, he won't be makrish truma of demasrot, and then we'll be in a much more serious issue because then you're dealing with the doraita level, not a derabanan level. Taking the question and said, now we moved it to a derabanan level, and what's the best scenario? How many derabanan should I violate? And which is the better derabanan to violate? Is it better to violate tevel mi derabanan? Or truma derabanan with an isur Shabbat derabanan? Which is the better decision point? Now Gemara says, Lema Tanayahi, let us say this machloket Tanayim with regards to Rabba's statement that if Efshar Bachulin, we go ahead, the Tanya. Someone who gets bitten by a snake, we call a doctor even if he has to come makom la makom. We rip open a tarnagolet, which is supposedly a cure for the venom of the snake. They put it on the point of being bitten by the snake. So these are all violations of Shabbat that we permit because of the sakanat nefashot of the snake bite, the venom. You're allowed to pick leeks for him. And you give it to eat. That was also supposedly an antidote to the poison of the snake. When he takes the leeks, he doesn't have to take off masrot from it. Rabbi Elazar bar Shimon Omer, lo yochal ad she'aser. He has to take masrot. Now here we're dealing with truma d'rabanan again, or masrot to meet the Rabbanan, because we're dealing with krishim, which are leeks, which are vegetables. Everybody agrees that yerek is a din d'rabanan with regards to trumot masrot. Everybody agrees dagan, grains, tirosh and yitzar, which is grapes, wine, olives, and olive oil, do require trumot masrot mina Torah. Fruit trees, most of the Rishonim, the vast majority of Rishonim, believe that it's only a din d'rabanan. There are a couple that say that it's a din d'oraita. But here we're dealing with something that's clearly d'rabanan, and here you have a machloket exactly about this issue. Are you mafrish or not mafrish when you have something that is a din de rabbanon? The Gemara says, Neima Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon hi. So let us say that Rabba's position only works inside of Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon's opinion, who says that there is such a possibility you don't have to take off masrot in this case. Where it says, v'lo Rabbi, and it's not Rabbi, because Rabba says everybody agrees that if it's chulin, then we go ahead and we are mafrish. If you can get to chulin that's sufficient, then we go ahead and do it. So here you're dealing with an Isur Rabbanan in Rabba's case. And he says, everybody agrees, if you can have enough chulin, go meet mafrish. Violate the din de rabbonon and Shabbat being mafrish. You have the same question here with regards to leeks. Should you be mafrish to motu masur? Just feed him the tevel de rabbonon. And there is a machloket. So we'll say that Rabba's position that says, you are mafrish to motu masur in that case, we'll say that accords with Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon and not the Rabbi. He says, no, afidu tema Rabbi. Adkan lo kama Rabbi altam elodinya maser yerek de rabbonon. Over there, the case is talking about Yerek, which is always Dirabanan. There is no case where you're going to have vegetables that are not Dirabanan in Trumot HaMasrot. If he does it here, okay. If he makes a mistake and does it even when he's not supposed to do it, you're again only dealing with a Din Dirabanan. Dagan Tevel Doraitahu. Over there, Ma'aser Dagan, where if it was planted in the ground, it would be Doraita. Afilu Rabbi Modeh. Rabbi will be Modeh. Di Sharit Le'batzi Che'enu Nakuf. If you let him do it, and eat it b'teva when it's in a pot, he'll eat it even when it's attached to the ground, when he has a pot with a hole in it. So we can distinguish between different types of tevel midrabanan. We're talking about tevel midrabanan of Yerek. The risk is only a midrabanan. Because even here, if he's not mafrish, which would be a violation midrabanan, so he's in violation midrabanan of tevel midrabanan, fine. Okay, now what we're afraid that he's going to learn from that, to eat this without being mafrish, what's the big deal? It's tevel midrabanan always. So he's not mafrish in vegetables, he's only in violation of Isur. So you're risking an Isur Durabanan to prevent a current Isur Durabanan. That we're willing to do. In the case of Rabba, where you're dealing with grains in a pot, the only reason you have a dispensation or it's Tevel Durabanan is because it's detached from the ground. So because of that, we allow you to either be mafrish Trumot Masrot and violate Isur Durabanan, or say no, because you only Tevel Durabanan. So according to Rabbi, if it was Tevel Durabanan, we should just say, leave it like that and eat it. But over there, there's more risk. The risk, there's a doraita risk. Because if we allow him to eat tevel midrabanan here, what's going to happen is in the future, he's also going to eat it this way. But next time, it's not going to be in a pot that doesn't have a hole in it. It's going to be a pot with a hole in it. And now you're going to have a problem because it's really chayav midoraita. So now I'm risking a doraita in order to prevent you violating a dorabanan currently. That I'm not willing to do. I'd rather you violate the current dorabanan to take off the trumot to masrot to prevent the risk of there being a doraita problem in the future. So that's what the Gemara says. Rabbi might agree in this case that because there's a risk of deoraita, that he's willing to violate the Durabanan currently in order to prevent that. But in a case where it's only to prevent a question about a Durabanan later on, we're not going to tell you to violate the Durabanan now. So therefore, Rabba's position can fit both into Rabbi and Rabbi Lozar Rabbi Shimon. Right now, just to take a step back here, the Gemara lays out a principle that we go akal akal. That when you feed a Misurim, we go by the most lenient to the most stringent. What happens in a case where you have, for instance, a clash? It's Shabbat, and now the person's sick, and you have to give them food. I have a choice now. I can feed them nevela. I have non-kosher food available. Or I have to shecht an animal to get kosher food. Which should I do? Nevela is an isur lav. Violating Shabbat is an isur skila. So if I shecht the animal on Shabbat, then I'm violating an isur skila, which is more chamor, to get him kosher food. But otherwise, I can feed him nevela, which is only an isur lav. What is the measure here? How do I determine? Haven't we have machloket rishonim about how to deal with this? There are some that say, yes, you feed him nevela, and that's it. Because that's the Isur HaKal. If I'm weighing against the Isur HaKal versus an Isur Chamor, the Gemara says, take the Isur HaKal. So Isur HaKal here is nevela. I give him the nevela, and I don't shecht on Shabbat. There are other rishonim who believe that the reason we allow you to shecht on Shabbat in that case is because the person might have a natural repugnancy to nevela. And therefore, the nevela is not going to provide him the relief that he needs. So it's a practical issue. When I was in college, the psychology professor at the time performed a study about kosher eaters, about what was their relationship to non-kosher food. And that they had a psychological aversion revulsion to non-kosher food that was way beyond what was just the halachic. To them it was disgusting, and that they would gag on such a food if they ate it. They actually turned the food into something that was disgusting to them. That they would look at it and say, ooh, who could eat that? That not only was it the halachic ramifications, but there was a psychological side. So he's saying the same thing over here, that some of the Rishonim say, that his eating of nevela is so difficult, it's not going to provide the benefit it needs. That's why we let him shecht on Shabbat. The other Rishonim who suggest, wait, let's look at this. If you feed him nevela, every bite he takes is an isur. He's continuously violating nevela over and over and over again. If you shecht the animal for him on Shabbat, one isur, done. After that, everything he eats is kosher meat. So in that situation, better to do one isur once, even though it's more chamur, than do multiple times a lighter isur. There's also the question that's always asked in the yeshivot. The answer is obvious, but the Torah says that if you have a choice here between kal and chamur, what would you do? The answer is always eat a kal. If you have nevela that you can eat, that's an isur lav. If you have a human being that you could eat, that's maybe at most an isur asay, but may not even have an isur min haTorah to eat flesh of a human being. So if I base it simply on the lochic line here, it says that I should eat human over isur nevela. It should be a cannibal over eating isur nevela. The answer is obvious, which is that's not a consideration here. We don't eat human beings. That's not even a question. It's not within the realm of possibility. So we don't say it's kal and chamor. It's just not a possibility. That's not an option, because logically it's just not an option. The Torah wouldn't even consider that an option. So you don't weigh it, oh, there's no Isur and there is an Isur. There's no option there. And you could argue the same thing here with regards to Shabbat, possibly here, that the bringing him the kosher food versus the Nevelah. Yes, in the technical sense, you're dealing with Chamor and Kal, but in a more general sense, if I look this in a more holistic sense, and giving him the kosher food versus the Nevelah, we already said that because of Pikuach Nefesh, we're allowed to violate Shabbat. So over there, we've already lowered the threshold for violating Shabbat. Maybe, in that case, that dispensation already says that the violation of Shabbat is not on that level of skila, and we would opt to do that over the nevela in that instance. All right, now the Gemara continues. Turn around on. Mishach zo bumus. Someone who gets bumus, machinu to dvash v'chol minei mitika. Give him honey and all sorts of delicacies, sweet delicacies. Shadvash v'chol minei mitika, meirin mori nav shel adam. Because that helps a person come back, get him back quickly. Even though we have a proof from this, we have at least have some sort of hint towards that, which is regards to Yonatan, when they go out to battle and he doesn't hear his father say that nobody's allowed to eat that day, and they're out in the forest and they find honey that's flowing and he takes it and he puts it in his mouth, and he says, says, look how my eyes lit up from just tasting this little amount of devash. He's critical of his father saying that they had to fast that day. He says, if we ate, we would have been even better. So he's critical of his father in that sense, but he says clearly that it's more inai. Umay afu pishin rai al tavar. Why isn't that a great proof? It says that his eyes lit up from eating the honey. Tatam la bulmus achaz. So he didn't have bulmus. I mean that he was just a normal person. He wasn't taken by bulmus, that was the relief. But we can assume that that same would be true. Amar Rabbi oshna el achar achila. It's only true after you've eaten your meal. Kodem achila midrar garir. He eats really sweet things before that. If you eat the dessert before the meal, it actually causes you to be even hungrier, and it whets his appetite and makes the situation worse. So here when we say that he gives him sweet things to help out with the bulmus, that's only after he's had his real food besides these sweet items. The sweet items are the cherry on top. That's what you give him at the end to really push him over the edge. But you have to give him real food before you do that, otherwise you're just going to make the situation worse. So here is a rayu that you have to eat your meal before you have your dessert. Right now, dichtiv, how do we know this? When the pasuk says, Vayimtu ish mitzri, this is when David HaMelech, by Tziklag, the Amaleki come, and they override the town where David's wives are, and where his family is, and all the families of the people that are with him in his army. The Amaleki come, and they override the place, and they take off with all the people. We talked about this before, about the Urim Bitumim. David asks whether he should chase down the Amaleki. Is he going to succeed? So he chases them down. On their way there, they bump into a guy who's left for dead on the way. And it's an Ish Mitzri. V'imtzu Ish Mitzri basadeh, v'ichu oto el David. They bring this Ish Mitzri to David. V'itnu lo lechem, v'yuchal. They give him food to eat, and he eats. Bread to eat, and he eats. V'yishku amayim, they give him water to drink. V'itnu lo pelach devela u'shnei tzimugim. And then they give him sweets, now dessert. They give him pressed figs, and tzimugim, and raisins, dried out fruit. V'yuchal. Then he eats. V'teshev rucho elav. Now he came back to himself. Ki lo achal lechem v'lo shat amayim shlosha yamim shlosha leilot. He had not eaten for 3 days and 3 nights. The story goes on. He was sick, and his master said couldn't be bothered with him. So they just left him behind. His master Amaleki left his mitzri for dead. And now they find him, and they basically feed him. And he is willing to give him the information as long as they don't give him back to his master. So he feeds them the information about where the Amaleki are, and David goes and attacks them and wipes them out and frees all the captives. So this individual, you see what it says. It says that first of all, he eats lechem, then he drinks mayim, and then he eats the sweet stuff. So you see the order in which you eat is you first have to have the real food and then have the sweet stuff at the end. Amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel, Mishach zo bumus, machinan oto aliyah b'dvash. If a person gets bumus, you feed him, aliyah is like the tail fat, but it means basar shemein. You feed him fatty meat and honey. That's what's good for you in those situations. Remember, Shmuel is a doctor. So this is Rav Nachman, his Talmud is saying in the name of Shmuel, is that Shmuel is mofia and shas in numerous places as giving medicinal advice because he was a doctor, including the famous incident between him and Rav. When Rav comes to visit Shmuel, and Rav curses Shmuel that he shouldn't have any kids, and he always regretted that for the rest of his life. Ravuna Brei de Rav Yeshua Amar, Afsolet Nikiyab Dvash. Even fine flour and honey is also good. Baba Amar, Afilu Kimcha Desare B'divsha. Even barley flour in honey is good for bumus. Rabbi Yom Yochanan Pamachat Achzani Bumus. I was taught by this bumus. Viratzli Mizracha Shel Teina. And I ran to the eastern side of the fig tree. V'kiyamti B'yatzmi. And I was Mekayim the Pazuk HaChachma Techayeh Baleah. The wisdom will keep the person alive. Because he knew that where he wanted to eat was from the eastern side of the tree. The Tani Rav Yosef Arotzeli Tom Tam Teina Yefneh the Mizracha. If you want to taste the best figs, go to the eastern side of the tree. Shenemar, umimeged tvuot shamash. This is the bracha of Yosef in Zota Bracha. It says meged from the word migadim, the sweets, the delicacies, tvuot shamash, are the produce of the sun. So you're facing the eastern side, then the sun shines on you all morning, and those fruits are the sweeter of the fruits. Probably should be the southeastern side. That side which gets the most sun exposure, those are the fruits that are going to be the sweetest. So Rabbi Yochanan knew that, so he knew to go to that side of the tree to get the sweetest to help himself out with the bumus. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Abikazle, Ve'orcha. We're going to have two stories here about walking on the way. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi were going together, traveling. Achle bumus le Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda was caught by bumus. Kafke de roe, achle de rifto. They basically jumped a shepherd, took his bread, and he ate it to get himself back. Rabbi Yossi, kapachte de roe. What are you doing here? You just shook this guy down. How could it be that you did that? Kimato, he didn't say anything. Kimato the Mato, when they reached the city, Achle Bumus Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi got taken by Bumus, this crazy ravenous hunger. Hadrua, Bage, Bitsai. People of the city brought him all sorts of foods and dishes. They brought him all sorts of delicacies and foods to eat. I simply took down this shepherd. And here you're shaking the whole city down to get food so that you can be cured. Vitu, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Gazle, Borcha. We have another incident here. It's not just Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, it's including Rabbi Meir. All three of them were traveling together. This is a famous story because the story appears other places in Shas regards to Mayim Achronim and Mayim Rishonim. So Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Dayik Bishma. Rabbi Meir was very careful about people's names. And if he heard a name that sounded a little suspicious to him, he would take precautions. Rabbi Yossi, lo habu daik bishma. Rabbi Yossi, we're not interested in people's names. Kimato lahau duchto, they reached the city, bawish pisa, they looked for a bed and breakfast, the person that could put them up. Yavu lo, they sent to this individual. Amru lo, mashmecha, when they got to the bed and breakfast, they asked the owner, what's his name? Amru lo, Kidor, my name is Kidor. Amar, shmamina adam rashahu, Rabbi Meir says, this guy is not good. Shnebar, Kidor tapuchol tema. Because the pasuk says, Kidor tapuchot, obviously it's ki, door, it's two separate words. But the play on the word, it's Kidor tapuchot tema, they are a backwards generation, one who mixes up right from wrong. So then clearly there's something wrong with this guy. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Ashtumalei Kusayu. It was Erev Shabbat. They gave over their wallets to him to watch for Shabbat. They put it in the safety deposit box with him. Rameir lo ashlem leik yisei. Rameir said, forget it, I don't trust this guy, I'm not leaving my money with him. Azal, he went, Otvei Bekivrei, or Azla de Bekavrei, he went out to the cemetery, and he put it, Bekivrei Davua, by the father of this individual, the bed and breakfast, his father was buried nearby the house. He went and he put it in the cemetery, assuming that people don't go into the cemetery, so if he leaves it over there by the gravesite, nobody is going to come and get it. His father shows up to the owner of the bed and breakfast that night in a dream. Come and collect the wallet that's sitting by the head of this individual, meaning that come get your money because there's a wallet sitting right on my head over there. Next morning, the owner of the bed and breakfast says to the Rabbono, and look, this is what I heard in my dream. So Amri Lei, Rabbi Meir says back to him, the Friday night dreams are not real. Friday night dreams, I wouldn't count on them. Because a person is really relaxed, he has a lot of food, that type of dream, that's all made up. Those aren't real dreams. So he tries to convince him basically not to go there because he knows that his wallet is there and he doesn't want him to go take it. So also Rabbi Meir, v'natchei kula yoma vayitei. Rabbi Meir remained there for the remainder of Shabbat. He goes out to the grave and sits there because he knows the guy knows about his wallet being there. The macham rulo havlan kisan. The next day, they're ready to leave on Motzei Shabbat, Sunday morning, they're ready to leave. Says, give us our wallets back. Amalo, lo yudvar me'olam. What wallets? I don't know anything about wallets. What are you talking about wallets? Well, Rabbi Meir, amaylo daipitu bishma. Didn't you know this guy wasn't any good? Because his name is Kidorim. Well, amaylo amartlan, mar. Why'd you keep that to yourself? You know, you kept your wallet. How come you didn't tell us not to put our wallets over there? He says, amaylo imar da amre ano chashosho zuke mi amre. He says, okay, when I hear a name like that, I say, okay, I'll be suspicious. To say that he's really bad, I can't do that. I'm not going to malign him or be motzi shemron in somebody. I don't know. This is just a suspicion. So mashu vaylu l'chanuta. They convinced him to come and sit down to drinks with him. And they saw when he sat down to drinks, chazol tofachaya spamei. They saw that he had leftover lentils on his mustache. They drank with him for a while. Then azlu v'yavu simana l'bitu. They go to his wife and they say, listen, give us our wallets. Your husband said to give us our wallets back. And this is the sign that he gave us to know that we're telling the truth, that you ate lentils for dinner. So shaklua l'kisar v'aitu, they took their wallets back, because she said, oh, how do they know we ate lentils for dinner? And they took them. Azo iu v'kadle itate, this individual was not so happy with his wife, so he went ahead and killed her afterwards for giving the wallets back without his permission. He had not said that, but he kills his wife. Hainu titanyo, that's what we have in a bright, maim rishonim echilu luba chazar chazir. Person who didn't do maim rishonim ended up eating treif. My machronim are good to nefesh, and by not washing my machronim, ended up with someone dead, which is this person's wife over here ended up dead because he didn't wash my machronim. Had he washed my machronim, he would have washed his fingers, and you also rinsed your mouth off. Had he done that, then he wouldn't have had the lentils, and the whole incident wouldn't have happened. Because he didn't wash my machronim, it ended up that his wife was dead because he had left the lentils on his mouth. My machronim, Helichilu Basar Chazir, was in a case where there was a restaurant, a Jewish restaurant, a time period where it was asur to serve kosher meat. The people used to come in there. There were non-Jews and Jews that came into the restaurant. So the Baal HaBayit, how do you know whether to serve them kosher or non-kosher meat? You can't ask them because it's asur to serve kosher meat. He'd wash whether they washed Mayim Rishonim or not. If they washed Mayim Rishonim, he knew they were Jewish and would feed them only kosher meat. If they didn't wash Mayim Rishonim, they would sit down. He would give them the non-kosher meat. Some Jew comes in, sits down, and he feeds him treif. Says, why'd you feed him treif? Because, he says, I didn't see you wash Mayim Rishonim. So that's the case there. Mayim Rishonim, Echilo Basar Chazir. He says, Ulusof, Haibudaiku Bishma. So now, Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda got a little wiser. And now they start paying attention to people's names. Kimatulau beta, dishmei bolo. They got to a house where the name of the house was bolo. Lo ayilu legabe. They didn't go in there. Amrei shmamino rashahu. Wherever this guy is not good because his name is Bala. Dichtiv. Vaumar la Bala ni ufim. I said about the adulteresses that are worn out, that they're worn out by how much adultery that they perform. Bala means to wear down or worn out. But Bala here is used in a negative context. So they said, this guy's not a good guy, we can't stay over there. So they learned their lesson from the previous time, and they moved on to a different place. Now, Mishnasho Kelev Shute. Person is bitten by a rabid dog. There are five things that are said about a rabid dog. Piv Patuach, his mouth is open. Viro Noteif, his saliva is dripping down. Voznav Sruchot, his ears are very big, and fulot the matan and turn downward. V'znavo munach ayirei chotav. And his tail is between his legs. U'malech b'tzidei drachim. He doesn't walk in the middle of the road, he walks on the sides. V'yesh romim af noveach min kolo nishma. He barks without his voice being heard. Mimai havi. What makes a dog rabid, or why does he have these wild dogs? Rav amar nashim kashfaniyot misrachakot bo. Some sorceresses were playing around with him, and that's what caused it. It's a ruach ra that came, a shade, some ruach ra that got into the dog. My binayu. What's the difference how it became there? Well, is he can be nayu, the miktalei bedavar nizrak. Can you come into contact with the dog? If it's simply kshafim, sorcery, then you can kill the dog. If you have to do something to the dog, you can do it directly. If it's ruach ra, then there's a risk in coming in contact with the dog that the ruach ra will pass to you. So you don't want to come into contact with the dog, you should kill it from afar. Tani kabata di Shmuel. We have a brighter that supports Shmuel's position. Shorgim oto, enorgim oto, elebit davar nizrak. When you kill it, kill it from a distance. Dechayve mistakein. Because if you rub up against it, you're in danger. Dinochile might. If bitten by it, you're going to die. Dechayve mistakein. If you rub up against it, you're in danger. Maitakante. What do you do? What's the antidote to that? What do you do for that? Nishlach mane v'nirhat. You should take off all your clothes and run as fast as possible. One of these wild, the rabbit dogs rubbed up against him in the shuk. Shochino lemane threw off all his clothes, veroit, and he took off. Amar kiyamti b'atzmi. I was mikayim and myself. Chachma techayeh ba'aleha. That wisdom keeps the person alive, similar to what Rabbi Yochanan said before, because he knew what to do. That's what kept him alive. Denachile ma'it. If he gets bitten by the dog, he dies. Ma'itakante. What's the antidote for that? Amar Abaye. Neite mashcho de apa. Should bring the skins of an apa de dichra, a male apa. Apa is, Rashi says it's savua, a wild striped animal of some sort. It could be a leopard or a striped hyena, something along those lines. V'nichto balei, and you write on the skin, ana planya bar planita, I so-and-so, the son of so-and-so, his mother's name. Amshcho de apa, dichra ktivna alach. This skin of this wild striped animal I'm writing on you. Kanti, kanti, glioris. Again, that's some sort of incantation. Gramila, kanti, kanti, glioris. That the incantation is that way. Ka, ka, Hashem tzvakot. Amen, amen, sela. That's what you write on there. Nishlechinu lemane, lekavinu. You take off your clothes. Lekavinu, bekavre. They put them and bury them in the cemetery. Atrizve yache shato. For 12 months, whether it's in the cemetery or in the fork in the road, it's a question of the girsa. Nefkinu, then you would take him out of the burial after 12 months. Niklinu betanura, then you burn him in the oven. Nadrinu lekitme aparshat rachim, and then you spread the ashes over the fork in the road. V'hanach shreiso yarche shato, for those 12 months, kishati maya, when you drink water, lo lishtei ala begufta denechosha, only use a copper straw. Because if you don't use a straw, dumuchazi beboa desheda, if you look in the water, you might see the reflection of the shade, but he's stuck in and you'll be in danger. Kaha, the Abba Bar Marta, who Abba Bar Menume, Abba Bar Marta, who is Abba Menume, Abba Ime Gufto de Dahava. She made him a golden straw so that he would never have to see his reflection in the water and be at risk of seeing the reflection of the shade there that would put him into danger. And that's the dangers that the Ruach Ra passed to you. So in order to avoid that problem, you don't look into the water, use a straw to keep you away from the reflection in the water. Okay, we'll stop over here.